This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
Sorry I'm so smart.
And Brock Rom.
This podcast would be a disaster if we didn't edit it.
Getting hired, building relationships, and becoming valuable are tools of the trade that Jody Millard has mastered. Jody has freelanced in college and pro sports for the Olympics in Rio, for local networks and in-house groups, and more recently, virtual events. She's also a fellow Husker.
Let's clap on zeros. I heard no latency. I'm going to get in the edit and realize it's like 5 seconds off from each other, but it sounded good enough to me.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today we have Jody Millard joining us, and this is by request from Justin, who works with the St. Louis Blues. Wanted us to talk with somebody who has an event background. And Jody obviously came to mind and was seemed like the perfect fit for this opportunity, and would love to get her insight just from working in both in college and pro sports and some Olympics and freelance type work. So Jody, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Good to see all of you.
Yeah, it's nice to catch up with you outside of the one text back and forth we usually get when the Celtics are out in Denver and playing the Nuggets, and you ask if I'm there and I say no.
Right. Never. You're never here.
I say no. I'm actually going to bed at halftime because the games are so late here. Can you give us a little background on what you do right now out in Denver?
Yeah, so I work, I'm a freelancer here in Denver. So I work for all of the professional teams. So Broncos, Nuggets, Avs, Rockies, Rapids. Used to be Outlaws, which no longer are, an LL, you know, good stuff there. But yeah, so all the teams here doing a lot of different things. So I'll do Chiron, I'll do Expression, direct some, and playback, video playback on some of that stuff. So wide variety for all the different teams.
How did you first get into that side of thing, you know, the control room environment, and what drew you to that side of the industry?
Well, the first experience was back in college, worked for Husker Vision, as you all know. You know, just got a taste for everything there. The fun of game day and, getting a part of the thrill of getting fans involved in games, and you know, the fun that you can have with people when you catch them on camera or, you know, whatever. So that was the beginning. And then I got out of it and worked for the PBS station in Nebraska out of college, producing for them. And then I worked in the trucks with them as well. And then it's been it was probably, we moved in 2012. So that was my like last full-time job when I left there. Got into some independent film when I lived in Arkansas for a little bit. And then freelanced for the Razorbacks as well.
Doing the same kind of stuff that I'm doing now. Is there a big independent film scene in Arkansas?
There is. Surprisingly, there's a good amount of independent film. I mean, I lived there a year and worked on 3 films. So it's pretty impressive, I think, especially because I never
would have guessed.
Right. I would never have thought that was something I would do, but I got hooked up somehow and volunteered on my first film, got paid for the next 2. And then we moved on to Denver. So I actually didn't connect with any of the teams here in Denver until I went to Rio and met Steve Johnston, who is the game press director for, I guess he's oversees the Nuggets and the Avs. And we were in the taxi cab on the way to our hotels in Rio. And he's like, "You live in Denver? Why don't you work for us?" So once I got back, then I started working for them. And yeah, there's this history.
That's awesome. Garrett always talks about the networking. It's funny that a taxi cab got you a local job, you know?
Right? Rio, in a completely different country. Yeah.
Now, Rio was the Olympics, correct? That's what you're referring to?
Yep, the 2016 Olympics, yeah.
How did you end up there? How did you end up in Rio doing the Olympics?
Yeah, so when I lived in Nebraska, I've always done freelancing. So even if when I was a producer at NET, I was still freelancing and doing stuff. I think we all do things on the side, right? Like you're never fully committed to one thing. I mean, you are, but then you also have 5 million things on the side. So when I was there, I worked for the College World Series, which is produced by Van Wagner. It was Big Screen Networks, I believe, back then. But now it is Van Wagner, and met Bob Becker, who is a great guy, and just got in contact with him after that. And my husband also is in the industry. And so we actually, he was at the Super Bowl 50, when he worked full-time with the Broncos, and was talking to Bob and, you know, mentioned that I was freelancing, and then we hooked up again and I went to Rio.
So, I mean, I think the takeaway from this clearly is just networking and who you know is huge in this freelance side of things, right?
Right, right. I mean, basically, you never say no to a job because you never know who you're going to meet and what other opportunities could come after that, right?
Yeah. I think what else is interesting is I've never known you to work just one position. You kind of work a lot of different positions. You might have one, you know, you specialize in or you like doing more. But if somebody asks you like, hey, Jody, could you run replay this weekend? And maybe you haven't ran replay for years or you haven't ran replay ever. Do you usually find yourself saying yes to that and just saying like, I'll figure it out later? Or is it a, you're trying more to stick in your lane?
I think it goes two ways. So yes, I say yes if I am confident in what I can do. I would never say yes to an EVS because I haven't touched an EVS since college, right? And that scares me because it's the EVS, right? It's very complicated. Dino or, well, I guess that's kind of a dying breed now, but Dino or Dreamcatcher, you know, are a little bit, they're different. And I know the Dino a lot better. So if somebody were to say they had that, you know, I would jump in or, you know, call one of the control rooms around here and go sit down and get myself a little bit familiarized with it again and jump at it. But I've been odd because there's a lot of freelancers that will say yes to anything and just do it and figure it out. I don't like to say yes unless I know I can succeed. And I might be scared still. Like I've done a lot more Chiron in the last few years. And I still remember back at Husker Vision when I think it was Scott Guthrie that was like, you should learn Chiron. That's a great job to know, a great position to know for future trucks and everything. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm not going to learn the Chiron. And now I find myself, most of my gigs are all on Chiron, right? So who knows what would have happened if I would have actually, you know, learned it the way I should have back in college, right? Another note to self, like if you have an opportunity to learn something and sit down and like actually get to know it, you should do it, even if you think it's not relevant. But I wasn't saying yes to a lot of TV jobs, broadcast jobs, because it was until I knew the Chiron well enough to say, yeah, I can go into a broadcast and do it because, you know, I don't like getting yelled at. And so, you know, as you guys know, TV broadcasting directors and producers have a bad rap for sometimes getting a little angry. So I shied away from that. So for better or for worse, that's what I've done.
That's a good piece of advice for kids that are in college right now or anybody working in a control room, is this equipment is stupidly expensive and it's hard to come by. So if you have free access to it, you should definitely take advantage of that and try and learn it while you can, because you're not always going to have that.
Nor the
time. I'm kicking myself, right?
Yeah, so just to touch on Chiron, if somebody doesn't know what that machine does or that program does, can you touch on that?
The Chiron graphics, it's a lot of production companies. I think they're all switching, not all, but some are switching over to expression in a lot of, I know ESPNU is doing a lot of expression. But Chiron is still used a lot. And yeah, it's just graphics for the truck. It's a beast of a machine, but it's really cool what it can do. And
you talked a little bit about how, you know, ESPN switching to expression and things like that. as a freelancer go about kind of learning some of those new skills and learning, you know, new equipment that obviously, you know, isn't just sitting around your house and you don't have normal access to?
Right. I mean, that is hard, right? Like how, you know, I sign up for what I can. We have a lot of our control rooms here in Denver have been switching over and getting new equipment. So like Rocky's just switched over and had like did a huge haul on their control room, installed Expression. And so I went to as many trainings as they would allow me to go to. So I went on Expression. We had used it some for Rapids. We've had it and now Nuggets and Avs are adding it as well. We've had it for a year or two now there. But I go, if they are having a training, I request to go. So even when they're switching to all Ross. So I went to the switcher training, even though I haven't TD'd probably again, since, you know, 2010 probably is the last time I actually sat down at a switcher but I wanted to learn. Right. And you take, again, I think this goes back to what we were saying, right? You take any opportunity that you can to learn the equipment. And anytime somebody is willing to sit down with me, even after, if it's not, you know, instruction by the installers or, a designated training session, if anyone will sit down with me and try to show me some sort of software or equipment, I'll do it because it's worth it to know.
You brought up the Olympics, which I think is super, super interesting. And, you know, learning all these different, software programs and also hardware. When you were in the Olympics, down in Rio.
When you were in the Olympics.
Can you tell us what that experience was like? Like the days and the hours that you put in on a day, and how many different were you on one thing for the whole time you were down there? Was that like your primary role, or did you flip between different sports venues or and different different types of work that you did there?
Yeah, so I was stationed in Deodoro, which is a region in Rio. And I was at the equestrian events. So I was there the entire time. And it was one of the longer sporting events that they had. So I can't remember if it was, I know I was there for 3 weeks for the Olympics. And then I went back for another 2 weeks for the Paralympics. I was at equestrian, and I had never seen an equestrian event before. And so it was such a interesting thing to start to be a part of. And I lied earlier when I said I hadn't TD'd, because when I was there, I had a TD and direct. It was quite an experience there. The days were long, sunrise, sunset, and then it was like a 13-day competitions. And they had a whole lot of events that I've never seen before.
How do you manage that? I think one of the things that you talked about earlier was that your husband's also in the industry, you know, having, you know, the crazy hours that this industry has and with you having kids. I mean, how do you manage kind of the freelance lifestyle with everything else that you've got going in your life?
I mean, how do you manage anything these days, right? You figure it out, right? The best part about doing events for me for freelance is that, you know, a lot of the in-house stuff that I do, you don't have to be there till 4 p.m. My husband's job is now more 9-to-5 type job. And so there's like very little overlay. So the best part for me, and I mean, this is one of the biggest benefits of being a freelancer for me, is being able to spend that extra time with my kids, right? So I'm with them for the day, all of their awake hours. And then, you know, we cross over, high five on the way out the door. And I go off to work and he's home with the kids. And I wouldn't be able to do it without his support, right? If he wasn't willing to, you know, be a single dad while I'm out at work and, work in cooperation with each other, it's huge. So I appreciate him because he allows me to do what I need to do. And when I have to travel, you know, he takes it on and is literally a single dad every day that I'm gone. And, it's great. It's a great system we've figured out.
Is that the best you ever sleep when you're in like Rio? You know, you work long 8 hours and just go crash knowing that you're not going to get interrupted sleep. It's, you know, probably the best 8 hours consecutively that you'll get, maybe 6 hours, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You don't have a baby waking you up at 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. or whatever. And luckily my kids are at the ages that they don't do that a ton. You know, I say that, but then last night they were literally up in the middle of the night, like poking me on the bed and trying to wake me up. But it can be hard, right? Like, especially, you know, when I had my boys in their newborn stages and I was doing working nights, right? So I'm working nights, I'm coming home and then not sleeping and then waking up and with them all day. And then, you know, the next day, you know, sometimes, you know, during homestands, right? Like you could be working, you know, 5 days in a row, and if you're not sleeping, it's brutal, but it's worth it, right? Because figuring out how to make it work, and you get to be with the kids, and you get to do what you love to do on the other end of the spectrum. So it works.
What's the biggest benefit outside of the kids of being able to work nights and trade off with your husband in order to let both of you do what you really love and enjoy doing, you know, as a family too?
I mean, I think there's lots of benefits, right? There's like the benefits of the boys having one of their parents there all the time. I have had to put them in daycare occasionally, but it's been pretty minimal. Back when Spencer was full-time with the Broncos, there was a lot of like drop-in daycare until he was off work or, but I mean, I think it's huge for the kids that they've been able to have one of us around for their entire lives, that they don't, you know, I never talk down about daycare because it's a necessity, but it was important for us to have that. But it's also been important for me to have a career of my own. I didn't want to lose that. And in this industry, it can be really hard, right? Like if you give up some of your jobs, if you don't take jobs, or if you take a break, you know, you get forgotten about. People move on, they find somebody else, then you lose your spot. And so that's also, you know, part, a lot of what we've done, a lot of my nights working and is because out of necessity, as well as enjoying it, right? But also out of necessity, because I can't, you know, I don't want to lose those and then start at the bottom and work my way back up. So it's an interesting balance to try to figure out, and somehow we've made it work.
You know, we talked about networking to get into the industry. What advice would you have to somebody, Jody, who's coming through this and wants to get into the event-based freelance world, you know, whether that's with a local team or that's with somebody like Van Wagner? What do you see as the first real step there?
Building relationships is huge. Finding a way to get to know somebody. It's hard because sometimes, you know, it's easy to get in. You just send in your resume and they happen to have a spot open and they're like, yes, we gotcha. And sometimes they don't have any availability. But you don't want to, you can't let yourself drop out. You want to stay connected, and whether that's, you know, going for coffee, trying to talk with people about, you know, things that you can do, just using it as a resource of, hey, with a crewer, you know, let's go get coffee. Would you be willing for me to take you out and give me some insights? And then that way you get to know them, they get to know you. So that way when they do have positions open, it's easier for them to say, oh yes, we have such and such. You know, that they would be perfect for this position. And never say no, right? So if they have a utility position open, take it, right? You don't ever say no. That's how you get in. That's how you get to know people. That's how they find out your work ethic. And then you find other ways to get on, you know, you find other positions that they're willing to train you on that you might not know, but that's where they need a spot, and you do it.
I think you're exactly right with the, if it's a utility position, who cares? Just take it. You know, I've seen so many people who start as utilities and then they learn a little bit about graphics and then they move to graphics, or they learn a little bit about replay and they move to replay, or they say, oh, I want a TD, you know, and those opportunities are there, especially if you start from the bottom. You know, it's a lot easier to work your way up than to try and come in and say like, well, I'm a TD, I'm only a TD, and I'm not going to take anything less than a TD because that's where I feel I'm valued at, you know?
Right. And I think there's other, like, you know, sometimes there's a stigma with working in-house from like the production trucks, right? Or vice versa, even. Some people, there's a stigma with working in a production truck instead of doing events. But why not learn it all? Why not do it all, right? I mean, you're learning, every opportunity is a chance to learn something new. Even if you're an expert at whatever position you are, there's always somebody else does something differently, or it has a different philosophy about a show, and it all like merges together to make you a better person and make you more marketable for other jobs.
And then, I mean, what is the relationship like between freelancers in a market? Because obviously it's kind of this unique blend of, you know, you're competing with them for jobs, but the networking is important. And, you know, I mean, how does that work specifically with your experience in Denver? I mean, do freelancers kind of look out for each other? Is it cutthroat? What is that like?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on the people and it depends on how you approach it, right? Like, some people are very, what's the right word? They're very possessive of their job, right? And they get insecure, or I don't know if that's the right word, or they're worried that if they help somebody learn the position that they're going to work themselves out of a job. But in Denver, I've found a lot of support. I've had a lot of people that have been willing to sit down with me, and especially like with Chiron, you know, like I said, I didn't know that before I'm moving to Denver, other than literally calling up a number and playing it out. I think that's all we ever did back in college. So like now to be building and, you know, creating graphics, like that's a lot to learn. And fortunately I've had a lot of people that have been in the industry for decades that have been very kind and willing to sit down with me and teach me. And without them, you know, I wouldn't be able to say yes to other jobs that come up, and I'm very appreciative. And so it's paying it forward. But I think, again, it's all about how you approach it when you talk to somebody, right? Like being kind and getting to know them. Again, the relationship aspect of this industry is huge, right? Like if you come about it and just say, hey, teach me this, right? Like somebody's going to brush you off and say, no, go away. But if you create a relationship with that person, I think it changes the way that they look at you and are willing to sit down and share their knowledge, share their wealth of knowledge with you.
One thing that I've always thought in my head, like I've always had staff jobs. I've worked a little bit of freelance here and there, but all of my career moves have been, you know, on staff. And I always kind of looked at it like, it takes a different kind of personality to be freelance that I don't think I have. I have no desire to go freelance. Like it, I know it's great for those people, but like you having had kind of both positions, do you find that's true, that it kind of takes a big personality shift, or there's a certain personality that's good for freelance and a certain for staff? Or like with you having done both, you know, is it possible to just kind of make that flip pretty easily?
I think it does probably depend on your personality. You have to be, I guess, willing to go out there and put yourself out there. You have to be willing to sometimes be okay with no work. And you have to have the stability. Like, again, there's so much time that I spent where I didn't have a lot of work that I'm thankful that I had a support system where that was okay. But you have to be willing to say yes and go after it. And, you know, some people, I don't know, not get complacent. I don't think that's the right word, but I think, you know, they like the stability versus the very unstable world of freelance. I mean, look at this year. You know, the majority of this year, there haven't been events. There hasn't been anything for freelancers. And it's been a hard year, but you also have to be able to adapt. So I'm very grateful that this year has actually been probably one of my most successful years as a freelancer, even with, you know, 6 to 9 months of no work. So, and I think that's because I've been able to find ways to adapt and, you know, a lot of my connections, and they've found, you know, there's different ways that events have been happening. And so it's through those connections and those relationships that I built that we've been able to find different ways. And I've been able to be used in a different model, I guess, or a different environment in the virtual world of 2020, and found some work that way.
So what was that like? You know, COVID happened, sports shut down, and now we were talking before the show, you said you're doing a lot of virtual events. What was that path like? You said you're out of work for 6 to 9 months. And then what was that first virtual event you worked in, and logistically, what was that really like for you?
So I was actually in Palm Beach when the pandemic started, working another equestrian event. And I remember sitting at the hotel bar watching the Nuggets play Dallas, and watching them come on screen. You know, there was talk the whole, you know, time right before everything started shutting down of what's going to happen, and sitting there, and then all of a sudden the little flash comes up that NBA is was postponing the season, and it was like, you know, your heart sinking, right? Like I was in Florida and then was going to be coming home to be, you know, preparing for playoffs, right? And the rest of the season and playoffs. And, you know, you just see your world kind of just crash. And then I woke up the next morning and NHL had also postponed. And it's just like this ripple effect. This last year, I also started working a lot of like in events, like in-person events, like meeting and events, conferences, that sort of thing. So a little bit different from our sports world, but there's a lot of overlap as well. But all of those in-person events started canceling as well. So like my calendar just started, you know, opening up a ton. It was just scary. It was so scary because, you know, I had no idea what was going to happen. And we had no idea how long this was going to last. You know, there were talks about like, we'd shut down and everything would be back up in a month or something. And, you know, here we are, this world is still chaos. But yeah, so that was back in March when everything kind of canceled. And then the Avs brought us back for some second screen experiences is what they were calling it. So we did do some virtual events that way. So that was a lot of expression work there. During breaks, like we would normally do in-house, we were doing the same things virtually for the fans. They were trying to find ways to, you know, keep people engaged even since they couldn't be there. Rapids did some of that as well. And then recently I've been doing some virtual conferences for companies that need to find a way of holding their meetings. And, you know, the industry is just finding ways to make that happen and being innovative and making it work. And that's, you know, what we've been doing, a lot of Zoom calls and broadcasting things that way, which has been fun.
What has that looked like, some of those virtual conferences, and, you know, how have those been run technically, like multiple locations and, you know, all virtual control rooms? What have you seen on your end with that?
So the ones that I've been doing recently, we had our control room set up in Texas. So I was the content producer there, making sure that we had everything ready for the show. So as you can imagine, with these virtual conferences, there's a lot of pre-produced content, a lot of it. And so I was there, the director for the show was there, and then video playback and a PowerPoint presenter. And then the show. A couple of them were in New York. One of them was in Hawaii. So that's the studio. So camera was there. Studio manager was there, our stage manager, and the talent. And then our show caller was in North Carolina. So it's, I mean, and then I think our executive producer was in Chicago even. So we had so many people from so many different places. And then people were able to call in or Zoom in as well. We had a couple different outlets for people for if they had questions or if they were presenters and such, there's a different format for each of them. But I mean, it's quite the undertaking, and it's pretty impressive how many different places and how they, you know, teleprompter is running from somewhere else as well. And it's really cool to see what the industry has been able to make happen.
How did those run? How did those compare to kind of a normal show? Did you find there was, you know, some disconnect not being there in person, or did it kind of feel like normal?
I mean, the hardest part is communication, which we all had headsets. We all had an intercom set up. But right, like if you have to get a hold of somebody in the studio and nobody's on comms, it's a lot harder to run to the other room, or you can't, right? Like, but it honestly ran so smoothly. It ran like a normal show because of technology, right? There's just so many different aspects to technology that makes things like this work. And it seemed like we all were just in the other room.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear, because you hear, I mean, when we talk about, you know, with Adobe starting to open up the doors where people can hire somebody from wherever, because now it's all about the talent. You want to bring in the best talent, and it's kind of closing the gap. So it's interesting to hear that you had an executive producer one place, you guys were another place, the show was in another place. Like, that all has been stuff that has typically been had to be done like near location. So I guess what challenge have you seen that's been overcome in the last 9 months that kind of surprised you, besides obviously the location of people? Has there been something where you go, wow, this has really challenged us, and this is really cool to see what we've come up with, and we can see using this going forward, coming out of this situation?
I think I have a different perspective because I'm a freelancer, right? I don't have to come up with how to do things. So what is interesting to me was, you know, watching the Avs come up with content and ways to engage their fans without their fans being anywhere near them, right? And how do you monitor if people are actually engaging? How do you do give them content, or how do you pull them in and actually want them to stay and do it successfully?
Because you mean you don't hear the crowd noise, or you don't hear them cheering, right? Or reacting?
Yep. Right. You can't, you know, you don't know, like, is it, you know, you don't have a hype video that, you know, is going to make them get excited for, you know, the puck drop, or you don't, I mean, you can run it, but, you know, are they responding to it? Or, you know, there's just a lot of different aspects that go to being in person in the arena, it's hard for them to figure out how to gauge that. So it was really interesting to see how they were coming up with ideas of doing that. But as a freelancer, you know, I don't have to help them come up with any ideas, which is kind of nice. I can just show up and see what they're doing and say, oh, that's fun. You know, that poll question that you did that people liked, or, you know, but I've been really impressed with how our industry, and I already said it, but with how everyone's been able to react and, you know, try to keep it going. You know, it would have been really easy to say, well, this year's done, let's just move on and go to next. But nobody has wanted to do that. And I think that's a big part of the people in our industry, right? Like, we're just people that always want to find something creative and something fun to do and not just give up. Like, you know, would be really easy to do. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, it'd be really easy to say, oh, we'll just let this year go away. And so it's been nice to see that did not happen.
Can you talk about a little bit about the overlap between all the different teams? You mentioned all the major sports teams in Denver that you work with. Are you working for or do you have one person that is the crewer that you connect with that also crews for different, or are you working individually with each one and having to set your own schedule? Can you talk a little bit about how you go about that and making sure that we talked a little bit earlier about you saying you always want to say yes, but how do you hold all that stuff in balance and working with the different people?
It's hard. Yeah. So we don't have one crewer for everybody. We have, Broncos has their own crewer. Kroenke, which is the owner, Kroenke Sports Entertainment, for Nuggets and Avs and Rapids. So at least all of that is centralized, but that's for in-house. But then there's also another crewer for all of the television broadcasts. And then there's one for the studio broadcasts, which I also do some studio and truck broadcasts as well. And then Rockies has their own, let alone all the other types of events that I work with that have all the different crewers as well. So yeah, it is. I still have a printed calendar. Call me old fashioned, but I like to see my schedule all printed out. I still have a hard time looking at, you know, my Apple calendar and seeing where I have to work. So I like to write it out and print it out. And yeah, it's hard. And sometimes I do my best. If I say yes to somebody, I try my hardest never to back out on them. If I commit, I'm committing. So a lot of times if I do have other opportunities that come up, you know, I've worked on those relationships with those crewers to, you know, talk to them and say, hey, I had this opportunity come up. I will never drop you. Like, I will never just say, no, I can't be there. I will ask them if they're able to fill that position. And I will tell them if they can't, I'm yours for sure. But you know, a lot of times they are willing to work with you if you have another opportunity, which has been really amazing. The people here in Denver are great crewers to work for. They will do anything for you. Especially if you will do anything for them, if you never say no, or, you know, you're always willing to learn something else, or, you know, you're always willing to be there for them. They'll reciprocate. So it's been, it can be hard. It can be hard to balance everything, but luckily a lot of pro teams don't like to overlap their games. So it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah. I was going to say, so when the schedule comes out, are you getting hit up like at the beginning of the season? Like, what does it look like you're going to be able to do? Is it more of like a month by month or week to week kind of basis that they're reaching out to you?
Different teams do it different ways. Broncos will schedule because their schedule is so they don't have as many games as Nuggets and Avs. I mean, NBA and NHL, I think it's 90 some home games between the two of them. So that's a lot harder to crew out for the whole season versus Broncos. I can't remember what is it, 8-10 home games, something like that. So they crew out the whole season. And then for the other ones, it's probably month in advance, I think, is what we usually are at for crewing, which is manageable. I can look at my schedule a month out. I can't necessarily do it 6 months out.
You know, for me, I'm just curious what advice you'd have for someone who's, especially in college, you know, doesn't know anything necessarily about the freelance world, like someone who's interested in going that direction. What advice would you have for someone maybe right out of school who's considering going freelance?
I mean, I think, you know, what I'm about to say is networking, right? Like building those relationships. That's the most important part, I think, of becoming a freelancer. And the other thing that we've already talked about, never say no to opportunities, even if it's, you know, below what you believe is below you, or the cost or price isn't really there. You know, I still take jobs that are, you know, pretty low paying jobs because they're amazing opportunities, even if it, I mean, different teams have different budgets. I mean, I did a bunch of rugby last year. I would never have imagined doing rugby in Denver, Colorado, but we had a professional team here. And, but as you can imagine, rugby's budget is not going to be the same as the Nuggets or Avs or Broncos. So I think knowing that or being willing to adjust your pay scale for yourself and having like a scale, I guess is the easiest way, you know, and not pricing yourself out because, again, you never know what opportunities are going to come out. And then, you know, I've also created an LLC. So I think depending on how much freelancing you want to do, it's if you're contract work or W-2 work, if you're going to do a lot of 1099 contract work, you need to have an LLC and an accountant to help you through all of that, because it can, if you're doing it full time, it's going to be a lot to manage. And you know, those people went to school for accounting for a reason. Those CPAs have their license for a reason. It's listen to their advice and, you know, keep those receipts and track your mileage and all the other stuff that goes into, I guess, owning your own business. Well, the other thing about freelance too is, I think, so look at all the different things you can do, right? Like you can do in-house, you can do production or broadcast, you can do event, like, which is non-sports related events. And it allows you to do so many different things. I also own a photography business. I also own a production or video production business. So it's like, so being a freelancer, I think also allows you to do so many different things that for me as an individual, I can pull into so many different creative avenues for myself. So I can do the fun event in the sports event stuff that I like to do. I can do my producing with the event production company. I can do show calling. I can do, you know, my photography is another outlet for my creative juices. And so it's, I think it's nice to be able to have the freedom to do some of that stuff as well, opposed to being, you know, in a full-time job where you have to be there every day.
I like the dabbler mindset because, you know, it's fun to, I mean, I think that's something that's probably consistent amongst all of us, is that it's hard to do the same thing every single day. You like some variability, whether it's variety in location or it's variety in what your task is that day or what you're working on that day, just to keep things interesting and who you're talking to, which is cool.
Yeah, I think it, again, it leads to different opportunities and different experiences, right? Like, you know, being able to go, you know, go to Rio and experience a different culture and different environments. And then, you know, there's different events that I've done this last year where I met Neil Armstrong's son, which, you know, I would never have done if I wouldn't have said, yes, I'll work an event. I'll show call. And, which is basically producing or directing the events and the like behind the scenes part of it. You know, some really cool experiences that, you know, I've also learned a lot about different aspects of different businesses that I've worked these conferences for, or, you know, learned a lot about equestrian that I would never have, horse eventing that I would never have learned if I wouldn't have gone there. And, you know, you get to meet a lot of different people. You know, some of my favorite stories about production and some of the obstacles that you've had to overcome was in Rio, right? Like you're working with people that don't speak English, and sometimes that there's some barriers with that, right? You know, there's one day my camera guy, I kept telling him to tilt and pan, and he would never move. And I'm, you know, it's driving me bonkers because I'm like, what else do I need to say? Or how? So eventually I asked my, one of my other, my video playback guy who speaks Portuguese. And I asked him to tell me how to say tilt and pan in Portuguese. And he said, tilt and pawn. Like, is that not what I'm saying? So, I mean, but it worked, so fun to look back. No, I don't think it did, but, it's just fun. There's just so many different experiences.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.